You're listening to the Daily, Daily Caller podcast on iTunes and thedailycaller.com. Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Daily, Daily Caller podcast. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. We have a lot of stuff to get to. Thanks to everybody who rated and reviewed the show and subscribe on iTunes and all that. You're the best word of mouth we have, so spread the word if you would, please. You get more of these, or you get longer of these, depending on how fast the audience grows, and the audience has grown, and I appreciate that. I got a lot of stuff I want to get to today. My last 4 hours, roughly, has been spent combing my living room for a pair of toenail clippers. So I'm feeling a little bit of a breathe of a sigh of relief, not because I have a hangnail that's been bothering me. It's because I have a one-year-old daughter that has been bothering me. She hasn't been bothering me, but the whereabouts of these toenail clippers has been bothering me. If you don't have kids, if you have kids, you probably already know where I'm going with this. If you don't have kids, this is my first child, and my God, they just try and eat everything. And I thought, where are these toenail clippers? Where did I put them? Did she eat them? And it just happened to be coupled with some constipation on her part today until that broke loose. Boy, did that break loose. But I'm thinking, holy crap, did she eat these toenail clippers? They're the smaller toenail clippers, but they're still, you know, be a tall order to swallow them. But I have no idea how babies work, so I'm like, I flipped over the couch, I tore apart the coffee table and all the drawers in it, I tore apart the pack and play, everything I could overturn and think of, I'm looking for these damn toenail clippers. I even held a magnet up to her stomach. I didn't know, I was desperate. But I figured, you know, she wasn't crying, she wasn't in a bad mood, and once she let loose with the constipation problem, I thought, okay, if I don't find these things tonight, last night, I'm going to take her to the hospital or to the doctor and get an x-ray because I don't know what, I'm at a loss. I don't know what else could have happened to these toenail clippers. But after 4 hours of searching, literally flipping, we have a coffee table with like four drawers in it and one of those lift top lids and everything. And I basically took it apart because that's where I normally keep them. I thought maybe it fell behind something. I found it sitting in her stroller seat. She'd gotten a hold of it. But she didn't eat it, or she didn't like the taste of it, thank God. And, so a big sigh of relief on my part, and then I could start focusing on what to talk about on the show today and check out the news. But, I had visions of, I don't even know what. I don't know what happens when you swallow toenail clippers, and I hope to God to never know what happens when somebody swallows toenail clippers, and I hope you never know what happens when somebody swallows toenail clippers. But just make sure that everything is put away. Don't even set it down for a second. I was cutting the cat's claws, and I got distracted, and I thought, where did I put those things? And then it was just a nightmare from there. Anyway, like I said, lots of stuff to get to that doesn't involve my daughter's fecal matter or toenail clippers in the news. Of course, yesterday we talked about the special election in Ohio between Danny O'Connor, the Democrat, and Troy Balderson, the Republican who actually won the Republican seat there in Ohio in the special election. They're just going to square off again in November. It seemed like a complete waste of time and money. I think that district would have survived quite nicely without somebody in Congress and not having to piss away millions of dollars and a bunch of taxpayer money to put on a special election in August. But this is the way it's done. So Balderson won last night by a very narrow margin, less than 2,000 votes. And it was outside the margin of a mandatory recount, an automatic recount. That is 0.5%. Balderson won by 0.9%. And then something curious happened. This seems to happen all the time in close races, and it always seems to favor the Democrats. It's very curious to me. Maybe there's some example where it favored the Republican, but I just can't think of one. I remember the Al Franken race, the first time he ran, when they just miraculously found more votes. And then the governor's race out in the state of, I think it's Oregon several times, Oregon or Washington several times. Dino Rossi, I remember, was the Republican who continually was getting hosed by this stuff. Where they find more votes. Miraculous. Hey, wait a second. There's a big stack of votes over here that nobody counted. Now, with a margin of victory of less than 2,000, just out of curiosity, just miraculously, Franklin County found 688 uncounted votes. What? How do you do that? How is anybody expected to believe that there were 688 uncounted votes out there? Now, not all of them went to the Democrat, but the majority of them went to the Democrat. Danny O'Connor miraculously picked up 190 votes extra, won by 190 out of those 688 votes. That's not enough quite yet to put them within the margin of an automatic state-funded recount. O'Connor can request a recount, but he'd have to pay for it. But because of the closeness of the election, it's going to take a little time. It's going to take a couple of weeks, actually. I don't think the race can actually be certified until somewhere around the 24th of August. And the earliest that the winner, currently the Republican Troy Balderson, can be seated and sworn into Congress, the House, when they're back in session, would be, I believe, September 3rd or 4th. So he's going to be congressman for about 20 minutes before the next election against the same guy he just beat. But in that meantime, the Democrats are going to do what they are best at, trying to steal elections. The 688 quote-unquote uncounted votes. Oh, they're just, oh, look at this. I suspect, not going to be orphans for long. They seem to always find votes in somebody's trunk. Oh, you know, for safekeeping, I put these ballots in the trunk of my car, and they completely forgot about them, and we didn't count them. And, oh, it's a 10-to-1 margin in favor of the Democrat. This has happened before, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not making it up. It's part of the reason why former Senator, disgraced Senator Al Franken, pervy, grabby, gropey guy, was a United States Senator in the first place. He actually lost the election on Election Day. He won it in the court system, and he won it through weirdly found ballots. I don't know if the Democrats are going to go full in for Danny O'Connor because they can try and win the seat again in 3 months, but it's telling how this works out. It's telling how this always seems to happen in a way that favors Democrats, isn't it? I find it curious. And who in the hell are these people in Franklin County that can misplace 688 uncounted votes? Now, they're either digital. I don't know what sort of voting methods they use in Ohio's 12th congressional district. If it's touchscreen, they're all on the touchscreens, and those should have been automatically counted, so that doesn't seem likely. It's most likely some kind of paper ballot. Now, every time I've ever voted with a paper ballot, they give you the little sleeve to put it in so nobody can see how you're voting, the little ballot condom that they give you. And then you take it, and you don't just leave it there. You don't just toss it on the floor. You take it over to another machine where it is entered into that machine. It actually sort of counts it, I believe, at that time. It at least registers it. And no human touches it. Nobody's allowed. You can't go in and mess with these ballots. You can't, especially if they're the kind that you mark or even the ones that you punch. So it's in there. How in the hell do you misplace, set aside, lose, whatever you want to call it, 688 ballots? How do you not count them? Did you not empty a machine? Were you that stupid? 688 sounds like a lot because there are precincts and there are districts. And in each district, there are several precincts and you have to go and vote in that. It's unlikely that 688 people all voted in one place, considering there was really low turnout in this election because it was a special election for one House race in August. So you have to ask yourself, where the hell did these votes come from? How did this happen? We'll never know. Nobody's going to ask. And the second these votes are found, they're miraculously counted, always favoring the Democrat. And then the ballots are put into the mix with all the other votes. Therefore, they can never be separated out again. And then even if a judge comes in and says, wait a second, this is too suspicious, toss those out. Well, which ballots? And then you get into this whole argument. Well, you could just take the numbers off of it. But the liberal left sues on that and said, no, individual votes must be counted. It is a scam. Democrats tell you that election fraud never happens, and then they do it right in front of you. It's like a guy saying how much they love their wives, and they get on the phone with their wives, and, oh, honey, I love you, and I miss you. And then they hang up the phone, and you pan back, and they're sitting in a car outside a strip club. And they're going in, or some brothel, or something. He's outside the bunny ranch, and he's going in. This is the level of deception and hypocrisy and duplicity that we're dealing with. I don't know that the Democrats are going to scrounge up or create enough votes to turn this election away from the actual results, but you never know. I wouldn't put anything past them. Of course, I wouldn't put anything past any politician. Those of you who've listened to this show for the 60-some-odd episodes that we've produced so far, or have listened to me on the radio in the past, or are familiar with my columns, or read my book, and you should all read my book, quite frankly. Go buy it now on Amazon. It's only $17. God knows I don't ask you for much. You know, I'm a cynical person, very cynical, mostly because it's been proven true. It usually pans out. And corruption in Washington is not limited to just Democrats. Congressman Chris Collins, who, to be perfectly honest with you, I'd never heard of before yesterday, was indicted on insider trading. And I watched the press conference from the prosecutors there in New York State. It seems like it's a pretty compelling case. He sat on the board of a company. He was a major investor in this company. It was a drug company. They had some multiple sclerosis drug that was coming down the pipe, and it failed its clinical trial, ruining the company, quite frankly. And he got word of it ahead of time because he sits on the board of this. And then miraculously, before this information went public, a whole bunch of his family sold their stock, saving themselves millions of dollars. They sold their stock before this information went public. It's kind of what Martha Stewart was accused of doing. And the stock tanked. The company it lost something where like 90-some-odd percent of its value. And they traced it back to Chris Collins. They had a whole phone chain of events that really circumstantial, but most evidence, you always hear that, because you hear circumstantial evidence and you go back to your watching Law and Order late at night while in college or suffering from insomnia, and you think, well, as soon as anything circumstantial comes up, everybody objects, because circumstantial, you can't convict somebody on circumstantial evidence. Most evidence is circumstantial. Unless there's an absolute eyewitness, most of the evidence is circumstantial that people are convicted on. But So he's facing a lot of time. He's not going to resign from college. He was removed by Speaker of the House Paul Ryan from his committee assignments. But one thing curious about this is Chris Collins did not sell his own stock. His family members did. They saved themselves a ton of money, but and probably made a ton of money in the way they did it. But Congressman Collins lost millions of dollars in this. He didn't sell his own stock, but there's a reason he couldn't have sold his own stock. He's not a dumb man. He's made a fortune. He was apparently the 13th wealthiest congressman in all of the House of Representatives, and there aren't too many people brown bagging it there. He couldn't do it. It would have been too direct a connection. Plus, apparently, he was under investigation for something else on the House Ethics Committee related to his business and relationship to this company, and he'd just been admonished for that. So if he'd have done that, that would have been a little too on the nose. So he lost a lot of money. Didn't really impact him all that much, but he did lose a lot of money. I don't know whether or not he's guilty. I haven't heard his defense. I did watch his press conference, and it was a whole bunch of laundry list of good things he claims to have done while being an elected official. Again, I hadn't heard of the guy until yesterday. There are 435 members of the House of Representatives, and I don't think most people could name their own congressman, let alone their more than that, especially some random backbencher from upstate New York. But this is going to develop. This is going to be portrayed, and you're going to see this in your newspapers today and your websites that you go to. It's going to be covered as if it were the Scopes monkey trial or the trial of Lee Harvey. It's going to be OJ Part 2. The media is going to go all in with this story, and you can see it in the headlines because it screams Republican. Republican CNN headline, for example, New York Republican Representative Chris Collins won't step aside, calls insider trading charges, blah, blah, blah. And from there, Republican is in the headline. Democrat scandals, you have to take out a jeweler's loop to try and find the party affiliation. So this whole thing is going to get a lot of coverage. The three network newscasts, for example, covered it. Two Democrats have been convicted of felonies. The network newscast did not cover them at all, didn't mention them at all when that happened. A Republican gets indicted, and it's the most important story in the world. Stop all the presses. Look out. But, yeah, I want to talk about it. If Chris Collins is corrupt, throw his ass in jail. Take his family, who was involved in this, too, and throw their asses in jail. There are rules, and just because you're rich and just because you're a member of Congress, you don't get to skirt them, like far too many of people up on Capitol Hill do. Remember, a few years ago, there was the big 60 Minutes report in coordination with the Peter Schweitzer book about how so many members of Congress use their positions, officials as members of Congress, to get insider stock deals, stock information, legislation coming down the pipe, government contracts coming down the pipe. They're alerted to this long before the public is. And many members of both parties have traded on that information. It was perfectly legal. Then in 2012, I believe it was, they passed the Stock Act to make it illegal for members of Congress to trade on insider information that they get, basically saying we now have to live by the rules that everybody else has to live to, that we force on others. Then about a year later, they quietly repealed that law because they make a lot of money doing this sort of crap. Chris Collins, I don't believe, would have been charged or could have been charged with a crime if he had gotten this information through the normal course of his day job. But he got this information because he sits on the board of the company. That's how it became a crime. That's how screwed up our laws are, and that's how screwed up Washington, D.C. is, that these members of Congress in their official duties exempt themselves from so many of the laws they force on the rest of us. Speaking of being forced on the rest of us, and my cynicism is almost always justified. When I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. Or at least I assume I will, should it ever happen. Again, you can email me, Derek at Daily Caller, to disagree with me, but I don't know that you could point out where I'm wrong. You can disagree with my opinions. But I want to talk about Nancy Pelosi and immigration, and then we're going to get to the Oscars quickly and the liberal darling Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Nancy Pelosi was down in Texas the other day, examining the border. She doesn't really give a damn about the border, but it's kind of funny. She was talking to reporters, and in the course of it, she made some rather curious comments, and it lets you know the priorities of the Democratic Party. Not that long ago, not even another lifetime ago, about 10, 15 years ago, even Democrats admitted, and everybody's played the audio, Barack Obama was talking about how illegal immigration is harmful to middle class and poor people in this country because they take jobs, they lower wages artificially, so on and so forth. The dangers of human smuggling, human trafficking, and the drugs and gang violence coming across the border. Democrats actually, not that long ago, cared about those things. But a funny thing happened. They started losing elections everywhere. They lost power, and they realized that they had alienated so many American citizens with their radical leftist agenda that they're going to have to create new Americans to win the votes up, because, you know, real Americans, natural Americans, either born or naturalized, aren't falling for their crap anymore. The promises of socialism have failed. Just look at Venezuela. Well, yeah, I mean, we spent the Cold War defeating communism. Why in the hell would we vote for it here? So they're trying to create a whole bunch of new Americans to fall for their garbage. And they see the pathway to that promised land in being the illegal immigrant population and race-based politics. So Nancy Pelosi's down there in Texas, and she's talking about what we have to do for these sweet, sweet, nourishing immigrants. And she basically says, if the Democrats win come November, if they take the House, they're going to have leverage to be able to legalize and put on the pathway to citizenship, the very short pathway to citizenship, no matter what they say, to citizenship of the millions, more than 10, it's probably closer to 20 million illegal aliens in this country, which will, they think, and probably rightly so, cement them a majority and the White House again. So let's listen to Nancy Pelosi, because she's very concerned about this leverage, and she gives you a really sad tale of woe, some emotional appeal. It has nothing to do with logic or the law, which she despises.
We believe that we will have leverage when we win in November. And why that's important? Because it gives leverage to every family, to every mom who courageously brought her child across the desert to escape death, rape, gang violence, and the rest. Because it gives hope because of the leverage it gives to families a father, dad may have gone home for a family funeral and now can't come back into the country. All of those injustices have to be corrected.
All of those injustices have to be corrected. She's very concerned about the sweet, sweet, nourishing illegal alien who returns home. She calls it home. They live there. Go home. Who return to their homeland for a funeral or whatever and can't come back into the country. Yeah, because we have laws in this country. Nancy, I know you don't like them. I know you don't like them, but you don't get to ignore them. You are encouraging other people to ignore them, because basically the Democrats are putting out the word, get into the country now. You better get here. Because once we get power, we're going to give you citizenship. We're going to grant you amnesty. I suspect that if this reaches Latin America, the people will start flooding across the border again if it looks like the Democrats are going to win. It's another reason to vote against them, in my opinion. But she's very worried about the injustice to these sweet, sweet, nourishing people who are breaking the laws in this country. And if they're working in this country, they're breaking more laws. If they've been deported before and they come back in, it's a felony. First time, it's not a felony. It's a misdemeanor. But that's neither here nor there. They don't care. And it doesn't matter how many Kate Steinleys there are. Democrats will never care. People are disposable. Individuals are disposable to the left in the name of the greater good. You want to worry about justice, Nancy? This story from Fox News. A previously deported illegal immigrant from Honduras who raped a child after Philadelphia authorities ignored an ICE detainer and released him pleaded guilty on Tuesday to re-entry. Isn't that lovely? They had him in custody. On another charge, ICE put a detainer on him, saying, basically, when you're about to release this guy, let us know. We've got to get this jackhole out of the country. His name is Juan Ramon Vasquez. You probably won't hear his name mentioned on the nightly news either. 45 faces up to, he's 45, faces up to 2 years in prison for again re-entering. He'd been deported a couple of times. Vasquez was deported from the U.S. in 2009, but found to be back in the country in March 2014 and taken into custody. After local criminal charges were dropped, Philadelphia officials did not comply with a detainer by ICE, and Vasquez was released. After his release in 2015, he was rearrested and convicted of rape of a child and unlawful sexual contact with a minor. He's now serving 8 to 20 years in state prison. We should just put him on a catapult, or more accurately, a trebuchet. They've got better range. And just launch him into the ocean. Now, because there's a chance he could splash down and be all right. Launch him into the Grand Canyon. That's probably too good for this guy, too. But still, I think it would be oddly satisfying. And what's messed up, if there was usable video or audio from this, I would play it. But the mayor of San Francisco was celebrating just not that long ago because the city was won a court battle to become a sanctuary city. And he walks into his office and there's a secretary or some woman standing there and he starts dancing. He says, "We're a sanctuary city. We're a sanctuary city." Yeah, good job. Congratulations. You've got this ruined child's life on your hands and all the blood you can possibly imagine, you sickos. It is politics above people. The individual is disposable. They're irrelevant. 100 million dead in the last century proves that. I don't know what more proof anybody could need. You can't make socialist utopia without breaking a few eggs, I guess. Sick, sick, sick. And Nancy Pelosi is right there telegraphing her punch. Don't worry, we'll have leverage to be able to give everybody citizenship. She's going to become Oprah Winfrey. You get citizenship and you get citizenship. Sick. Liberalism really is a mental disorder. And speaking of mental disorders, we go to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the liberal darling who the Democratic Socialist, who basically only won her election because the vast majority of Democrats, I mean, it was an incredibly low turnout election in Queens, didn't bother to show up. They didn't think they were needed. And the incumbent Democrat, Joe Crowley, didn't campaign very hard, didn't even show up to one of the debates, sent a proxy. But she has been making the rounds. She's raking in the dough. She's going out to Hawaii soon to campaign. I'd really like to look at her campaign's finances. Somehow I suspect that there's going to be like clothing budgets. Remember when Sarah Palin caught hell in the 2008 election because she didn't have a whole lot of money? And so the Republican campaign, the John McCain campaign, spent a bunch of money buying her clothes, you know. She's governor of Alaska. You need like a flannel, a pair of jeans, and some work boots to go campaigning most of the time up in Alaska. And you're about 500 miles between people. So you want to be comfortable. And, you know, suits not super practical in the wilds of Alaska. I somehow, and the media caught wind of that, and she caught hell for it. Oh my God, can you believe how much money she wasted on clothing? And holy cow, look at this. What a ripoff. I thought Republicans were supposed to be fiscally responsible, blah, blah, blah. You remember all the stories. I somehow suspect that either Cortez, you got to say her name properly or it's a hate crime, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, comes from a wealthy family. She grew up in one of the wealthiest counties in the country, Westchester, New York. She doesn't talk about that much. She's not actually from Queens. She's from Westchester. And so I think she comes from money. But I suspect still, even it's legal for a campaign to pony up a lot of things for the candidate. I think she's, if I had to guess, I don't want to cast aspersions, but socialists do love spending other people's money, don't they? I suspect she might have sold some or bought some clothing, if I'm guessing, with official campaign money. Anyway, she was on with the Obama Bros on their little podcast over there, where no difficult questions were asked. She says the word like an awful lot. And her perverted worldview is the norm. These are people right out of the Obama administration. These are people who gleefully lied to you about if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. So they ain't going to challenge a democratic socialist. Anyway, listen to this exchange.
And so for me, I think what's happening is that, you know, a lot of these folks were in their political heyday in third way 90s politics. And they were campaigning and they were really kind of connected most to an electorate when they were fighting for these seats, when they got these seats, when they were campaigning most, when we had more of an American middle class. And so I think that politically, this like upper middle class is probably more moderate, but that upper middle class doesn't exist anymore in America.
So the upper middle class is probably more moderate, but they also don't exist anymore. Just Just throwing that out there. This woman is the future of the Democratic Party, according to the chairman of the Democratic Party, and she can't string together a coherent sentence off the cuff. I think that unicorns are probably out there, but the unicorns don't exist, though. I think I'm going to win the unicorn vote, but unicorns don't exist. That's essentially what she's saying. She's whining about why Democrats aren't more liberal, why they aren't advocating for single payer, which she thinks is wildly popular. She thinks that she says that this country is way further left than the Democratic Party, which is not reflected in anything anywhere where it actually matters. How you answer a poll question about nebulous concepts in vaguely worded questions is not really an indication of the sentiment of the American people. The voting is, and Republicans have a majority in the House, and sure, fine, you liberals out there white-knuckling on your drive to work on gerrymandering. It's not that big of an issue, but fine, if you want to believe that gerrymandering is the reason that the Democrats have been out of power the last few years, go ahead and think that. They'll let you sleep easy at night. But that doesn't really explain how the Republicans have a majority in the United States Senate, which Senate seats are statewide. There can be no gerrymandering there, although some of the lesser informed Democrats have claimed that gerrymandering is why the Republicans control the Senate as well, which is simultaneously hilarious and scary that somebody's that dumb. And it doesn't also explain why Republicans have by far a majority of governor's races. Again, you can't gerrymander governor's races. It also doesn't explain why Donald Trump won a majority of the states in 2016. So you go ahead and you cling to your security blanket of gerrymandering, and the rest of us will live in Realville. But she thinks that the upper middle class is gone. It doesn't exist anymore. First of all, they have problems. They don't understand things. But it also doesn't exist anymore. Again, we're not dealing with a rocket surgeon here. Ain't no brain science. She ain't a brain scientist. She wasn't done, though. Listen to this.
And thanks to the continued deregulation of Wall Street, thanks to the continued gutting of working and middle class people.
So the upper middle class, the middle class is gone because of the deregulating of Wall Street and the gutting of middle class people. Don't you remember back in the Obama years and the end of the Bush administration when there were all those reports of people being gutted walking down the street? Again, I don't expect everybody to sound like they're reading from a script. I don't. And Lord knows I make verbal gaffes all the time in this while recording this, and I try and correct it as it happens. But there is no rehearsal here. There are no edits in this program. There is no script. There really is no damn clue what I'm going to talk about, except for a bunch of tabs open up on my computer and I'm talking into a microphone plugged into an iPad. It is all off the cuff, but I think most of the time I'm able to string together a coherent sentence. This woman is not. Under any circumstances, I have yet to hear her string together a coherent sentence. She's not particularly good at math. She doesn't understand economics, but she managed to win her primary with a few thousand votes and shock the world, and suddenly she is a media darling who shall never face a difficult question. And as they start, you know, laying out the rose petals from her flat in Queens to, I assume, directly to the Speaker's office in the House of Representatives, and then they're going to start plotting their way to the White House after that, the Democrats, for her. Not a smart person. I'm not saying she's dumb. She's not a drooling idiot. She doesn't need to be reminded to breathe in and out, in and out. Maybe she has an earpiece in telling her that. I don't know. I guess that wouldn't surprise me all that much. But when you hear her talk, do you really think, okay, well, this is somebody worth following? This is somebody whose ideas we have to take seriously. This is someone who's got it going on. They have facts and figures on their side. They have names and dates. They have a historical frame of reference for the things in which they believe, and they know how to get things done and do them right. No, you wouldn't hire her to work your sunglass kiosk in the mall on alternating weekends because she might have to run the register or swipe a credit card, and you couldn't guarantee that she could master that. But she is the media darling. One more bit of genius and nugget of wisdom in this from this interview. Now, in this clip, I got to give you a little heads up, a little bit of a homework assignment, because I do not want to play it twice. I don't want to hear it twice. Listen for her to say the word like a Valley girl would. I believe there are five or six uses of the word like in this very short clip.
We need stronger champions, but I don't think that they see exactly how rising income inequality has resulted in a very stark political reality, and it has changed our political landscape. But, you know, their heyday was in the 90s when, like, you know, kids had like Furbies and like parents, you had like soccer moms with like two vans and stuff. Like
Furbies and two vans.
Yeah.
that's the dream.
That's not America anymore.
That's not America anymore. They had like Furbies and like vans and like two vans and like soccer moms and like and stuff. Again, she sounds like a Valley girl. Not particularly bright. The future, the face, the hope of the Democratic Party, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She really seems to hold, you know, normal Americans in quite a bit of contempt, if you ask me. Oh, they don't look at these horrible people with their minivans and their kids and their soccer practice and the children with Furbies and ew, gross. First of all, who's got two vans? Who's rocking two minivans? Who was ever rocking two minivans? Maybe in the 70s, your family rocked two conversion vans because your two older brothers, Chip and Chet, could never agree on who had the cooler mustache, so they had to have their own vans because they weren't able to share one. But in the modern world, that ain't the way the world works, Alexandria. But she wouldn't know that from her flat in Queens, where she doesn't have a car. I really hope this woman never shuts up. I really, not just for the podcast's sake, but for the sake of the country. The world needs to know. The country needs to know. The far too few people in this country actually know what socialism is. They don't understand the government tyranny that comes with government making that many decisions in their lives. We hear it as a quaint idea described by college professors as if it's wonderful, but they don't ever go into where it's failed. They don't go into its massive failures. They don't talk about Venezuela. The whole country of Venezuela, I think it on average lost 19 pounds last year because there wasn't enough food to go around. Now, Maduro's still fat as the day is long, but the rest of the country, the real people in the country, are starving to death. They've eaten their house pets. They've raided zoos. They're fleeing the country. Brazil closed their border because too many people were fleeing the country. This socialist utopia. And there are human beings in this country, not just Cortez, who want that here in this country. But they think, oh, don't worry, we'll get it right. The only reason socialism failed everywhere it's been tried is because there wasn't really super duper smart people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez implementing it. Scary, scary stuff. The arrogance coupled with ignorance is an incredibly dangerous thing. Two more things really quickly. I'll do the Oscars in a second, but I just want to mention this story because this is how government works, and most people don't know this is how government works. This is from NextGov, I think. What is this? Yeah, NextGov.com. And this is true. I've witnessed this firsthand when I worked in the Senate. At the end of the fiscal year, offices start spending their money that they have left over. Every congressional office gets a budget that's fairly large. Some states get, like New York gets a lot more than Iowa senators do because they've got many more constituents to deal with, but they all get more money than they actually really need. So at the end of the fiscal year, which is the end of September, you start seeing the new computer showing up. You start seeing the new flat screen showing up in the office. You get upgrades on everything at the end of the year. And you think, well, what the hell? Why now? What's going? It's not like Black Friday sales or anything. What's going on? It's because at the end of the fiscal year, whatever money you have left over, if you don't spend it, you lose it. It goes back to the Treasury. So these offices, there are some offices who actually return the money. Senator Mike Lee, Senator Rand Paul, they actually return money every year. But you walk around the halls of the United States Senate or the United States House, the offices, and you begin to see a whole bunch of new stuff showing up because they gotta spend their money. They don't spend it, they lose it. Well, NextGov.com. A government spending spree of potentially historic proportions will play out over the final 7 weeks of fiscal year 2018 as federal agencies look to spend $140 billion more than they thought they'd get before Congress passed President Trump and President Trump signed the omnibus spending bill. Without a budget agreement in place, agencies spent cautiously through the first two quarters of fiscal 2018 before the omnibus, signed 6 months late in March, obligated an additional $80 billion for defense and $63 billion for civilian agencies. Federal agencies now flush with cash must obligate that money before the fiscal year ends on September 30th or lose it to the Treasury Department. That's a problem. Federal agencies, if they don't, if you just, we'll just use round numbers and we'll make up the agency, the Department of Widgets. If the Department of Widgets is allotted $100 billion for this current fiscal year, and at the end of this current fiscal year, they've only spent $90 billion. Next year, they won't get another $100 billion because they don't need $100 billion, obviously, if they can get by on $90 billion. They'll only get $90 billion. So they have a financial interest in pissing away that money on unnecessary things. This is where President Trump should really put the hammer down and say, knock it off. Just stop. This is enough. Send that money back to the Treasury. We're running up deficits every year. The national debt is huge. Let's get responsible. But they never do. Nobody ever does. Maybe there's a chance President Trump will do it, but he's got to do it soon because, man, those government credit cards are getting itchy. But this is how your government works. They don't think, oh, good, we'll return this money at the end of the year and save taxpayers' money. They say, oh, crap, we've got to spend this money or we won't get as much next year. It's sick. Government is a sickness. It's way too big, does way too much. All right, finally today, quickly on the Oscar. I love movies. I love movies. I have a couple of hundred of them on iTunes. I used to have like 400 or 500 DVDs. I've got rid of all those and ripped them all and got rid of the, donated them to charity. But I absolutely love movies. And I watch the Oscars every year, even though I can't stand the Oscars, because I love movies. Well, next year's Oscars, they're going to start a new category. And this is being looked at as a sellout by some. I look at it as a desperate ploy to try and get people to watch again, since last year's Oscars was the lowest rated Oscars ever. They're going to, it's the name is not official yet, but they're going to give out an Oscar for the best popular movie, which is passive acknowledgement that they nominate unpopular movies, movies that nobody wants to see, movies that nobody gives a crap about, they give the Oscars to. I write in my book about the phenomenon of the movies that are nominated for Best Picture. I think it was somewhere in the last 10 years, there were only maybe two movies that had grossed more than $100 million that were nominated for Best Picture. So they recognize that they have a problem. They've been basically thumbing their noses and flipping the bird and mooning the audiences that make them all fabulously wealthy every year by putting on a crappy show about movies that nobody wants to see. They're subtly acknowledging that and trying to change it. I'm not sure it will work because it's not just the fact that it's movies nobody wants to see. It's art house movies. It's message movies. It's liberal agenda movies that they nominate. It's also the show itself is far too long, far too boring. The comedian is far too political. The acceptance speeches get far too political. So I don't think that one category of a movie that people may have seen, likely have seen, possibly winning the consolation Oscar, is going to get people to tune back in, but I will. And I'll watch it so you don't have to. So if you don't want to watch the Oscars, feel free. I'll tweet about it, and I'll talk about it on the show. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow on the program is a really, really good interview, if I do say so myself, with Greg Jarrett of the Fox News Channel and currently sitting atop the New York Times bestseller list, the number one book in all the land. We have the author on the program tomorrow, The Russia Hoax. Make sure you tune in then. Tell a friend. And I'll see you tomorrow.